We're holding on Mem Vav Omid Beis, 11 lines from the bottom. We started learning yesterday about the importance of the mitzvah of levoya, of accompanying another person, another yid, when he's leaving, show him the right way, daven on his behalf, etc. So continuing on that topic, the Gemara says, Omid Abyechen Meshum Rav Meir, Kol She'ena Malava Umislava, a person who does not accompany others, or Mislava, or he's not accompanied by others, meaning it could mean that he says to the people, I don't need you to accompany me. It can mean that he, when there's nobody else available to accompany him, he doesn't learn Torah, as we learned yesterday, that would be a levoya for him. So whatever, he has nothing to do with levoya. Ilu shofich damim is as if he's spilling blood. And we see that, we see, because if the people of Yericha had accompanied Elisha when he was leaving their city, then he wouldn't have incited bears against children. So the story in brief is, in Sefer Melachim, it tells how shortly after Elisha became the head Navi, after Eliyahu Navi had gone up to Shemaim, the people of Yericha say to him that it's a very beautiful city to live in, as the Gemara is going to explain there soon. But the water over here is very bad, and it's causing people to be sick and to miscarry. So Elisha goes, and he says, put in salt over there, and Hashem says, from now on, the water will be good. And sure enough, it was. From then on, it became good, clear, clean water. So now the pasuk continues as Elisha was leaving the city. So it says that Naorim Ktanim, literally Naorim Ktanim means young boys, but the Gemara is going to ask in a second that Naorim suggests boys who are over by mitzvah and Ktanim suggests boys who are under. So we'll see in a second. Anyway, they go and they start making fun of him and they say, Alei Kereach, Alei Kereach, go away, baldy, go away, baldy. So then, Mephoshim explained on a simple level, they're making fun of. Look at this. You're nothing like your Rebbe Eliyahu. He had lots of hair, as we find in Psukim, whereas you're bald. But obviously, there was more to it than that, because the pasuk continues that he turned around and he saw them and cursed them in Hashem's name, and bears came out of the forest and killed 42 of them. So obviously, if they were just making fun of his appearance, it wouldn't have warranted such a severe punishment. So therefore, the Gemara is going to go into the story and darshan what exactly happened over here. But that's
the fact that they knew that he's a Talmud of.
They knew he's a Talmud of Eliyahu, of course. Anyway, the point is, though, that if there had been people from Yericho with him, then these Naorim, whatever age they were, would have been afraid to start up with him, and the whole thing would have been avoided. So therefore, the problem was that Elisha was going by himself. So Shanema, as the pasuk says, Vayal Misham Beisel, he was going up from there, from Yericho to Beisel. Yericho is in a valley, Beisel is in a mountain, so he's literally going up. Vohu Oila Baderech, he was going up on the road, which Marsha says that point, that the fact that it repeats those words, he was going up on the road, stresses the point that he was walking by himself, as opposed to anybody else being with him. So there we see that there was no Levoya.
Up to help his himself.
Yeah, because otherwise he doesn't have to say Vahu Oyla Baderech. Vayal Misham, he went up from there. So then when it says Vahu and he Oyla Baderech means only he and not anybody else. Anyway, Orim Ktanim Yotzim in a ear, young boys came out of the city, Vayiskal Sibay, and they made fun of him. Vayum Reloy, Alei Kereach, Alei Kereach. And they said, go away, baldy, go away, baldy. So why the expression? What do they mean by Alei Kereach? Omruloi, they said, Alei, go away from here. She krachto aleinu asamokim. You made the place bald for us. Meaning, Rashi explains that they used to, as long as the water of Yericho was unsuitable to drink, then you had some people were drinking it and they were miscarrying. That's what they were complaining to Elisha. But these boys used to make a living. They would bring water from other places and sell it to the people of Yericho, and they would make their living that way. So now that he sweetened the water, then you made the place bold for us. Now we can't make that profit anymore. But in a way that it shows their lack of emunah, as the Gemara is going to go on to say, it shows also they were more willing to profit off the misery of fellow Jews. But still, anyway, so the Gemara says, "Mayun orim ktanim." So what do we mean? Why are we calling them the orim ktanim? Again, a nair means above by mitzvah, shtei sairus, and then ktanim means below it. The word na'orim means they were shaken off of mitzvahs. They were completely empty of mitzvahs. And ktanim, show you ktanim amona, and they were called ktanim because they had little amuna, because they're worried what's going to happen with our parnosa. They didn't realize Hashem has many other ways of supplying parnosa for them. So in other words, neither na'orim and ktanim is meant to represent their actual age. But the Pashtos, the Gemara is bothered by if they were little kids, then they can't be punished in a Shemayim. They're not fully responsible for what they do. Anyway, so that's one explanation. Tana, then we learn in a Braisa a different explanation. Na'orim ha'yu, they were in fact Na'orim, they were young men above the age of Bar Mitzvah. But they acted in a derogatory and disrespectful way like children by making fun of him. Maskif for Rabbi Yosef, but Rabbi Yosef says, why do we need to assume b'chlal that Na'orim tells us anything about what age they were or what or how or that they were Na'orim in a mitzvah? The Dilmal Shem Mekoyman. Maybe the word Na'orim is after where they came from. Maybe they came from the city of Na'aron or Na'uron, which is mentioned. It's actually a city in Eretz Yisrael mentioned in Divrei Hayamim. After all, don't you have a pasuk elsewhere in Malachim? It describes how the Arami soldiers used to go out in bands. In other words, even when they weren't actually fighting open battles against the Jews, sometimes they were going out in bands to raid Eretz Yisrael. By Yishbu Eretz Yisrael Nairak Tana, and they captured from Eretz Yisrael a young girl. And the pasuk goes on to describe when Naaman had Saras, she's the one who said to Naaman's wife that he should go to the Navi to be cured. Anyway, so the question is again, Rakashal on Nairo Ktana. So we have the same question. Was she a Nairo or was she a Ktana? V'omra Pados, it means Ktana demin Nu'uran. It means she was a Ktana, but she was from the city of Nu'uran or Na'aron. So by the same token over here, why don't we say that Na'orim Ktanim means Ktanim from the city of Na'aron? The answer is Hosim Lem Farish Makoma, because in the Pasuk with this girl who was captured by the Aramim and then worked in Naaman's house, doesn't say where she was from. So therefore, other than that, doesn't say in the pasuk where she's from. So we have good right to assume that she came from Na'aron. Here it says they came out of the city. The una'onu kanim yotzu min ha'ir is the expression in the pasuk, implying that they actually lived in Yericho. So therefore, there's no reason to assume they lived in Na'aron. Okay, fine. So now the pasuk continues. Vayifen acher vayirim. He turned around behind him and he saw them. Vayikavalem b'shem Hashem, and he cursed them in Hashem's name. So first, so mara. So what did he see? So the question is really twofold. First of all, why does he need to say raw anyway? Obviously, if he turned around, why does he need to say vayirim? If he turned around, obviously he saw them. And second of all, Marasha explains, you're not allowed to curse a fellow yid. So what did he see on them that warranted such a severe punishment? So Omar Rav, Ra'a Mamash. So Rav says literally means seeing in the sense, Kedetanya, as we learn in a Braisa, Rav Shimon Gamliel, called Mokam Shenosnu Chachamim Einehem, wherever the Chachamim put their eyes on somebody in a harsh way, when they're looking at somebody because in a punishing way, Oy Misa Oy Oini. The result is either the person dies or he becomes poor. So in other words, here, with Vayirem, Vayikalalem, he didn't explicitly curse them in Hashem's name. It's also to do that to a fellow Yid, but he gave them a look, which itself was a curse, and that caused them to die. That's Rav. Shmuel Amar Rosh Kol Nisabra Behen Iman B'Yom HaKippurim. Shmuel says he saw Beruach HaKodesh that all of them, their mothers, had conceived them on Yom Kippur, which means, of course, that all their parents had done something which is also on Yom Kippur, because Tashmish Amita is one of the things that's also on Yom Kippur. So he realized that and realized, therefore, that they're not only they themselves are acting badly, but like in their origin already, they're no good. Marsha points out, you would have to say that he had the Kabbalah, that it was that. Otherwise, why is he mentioned specifically on Yom Kippur? He could have said, Shmuel could have said he saw that they were all born from Nidus. He could have said they saw that they were all Mamzerim or whatever. So evidently, Shmuel had the Kabbalah that it was Davka Yom Kippur was the issue here. Rabbi Yitzchak Napcha Amar, Bluris Ra'alehen. Rabbi Yitzchak Napcha says another one. He saw that all of them were wearing a bluris, which is a goyish hairstyle. The hairstyle of a bluris was basically the hair was shaved in front and then left to grow long in back. And it was a goyish style in those days. Even much later, you find it in here and there in Shas. The Greeks and Romans used to wear that kind of hairstyle. So showing again that they're acting completely like goyim, ke'emodium, like the way the emodium wear it. So again, it shows that they're not even acting even b'chitzonius as Jews. Of Rabbi Yochanan, Amar Rosh LeHoseben Lachluchas Shal Mitzvah. Rabbi Yochanan says it means he saw there's not even any moisture of a mitzvah in them. They don't even have the slightest bit of a mitzvah. So, so in any case, so this ro'a, so vayar means vayirem, means that not just that he saw them physically, but that he saw beruchnius, that they're completely flawed like that. There's something wrong with them. But the question is, on Rabbi Yochanan's one about lachluchas shal mitzvah, the duma bizar ayun niya v'hava, still maybe their descendants would have had mitzvahs. Amar abalazo loy bom loy bizarim at soif kaladoris. Elisha knew, Elisha saw beruach hakodesh, that neither they nor their descendants are going to have any mitzvahs until the end of all generations. So therefore, in other words, he figured there was no great. So basically, therefore, there's no great harm in having them removed from the Jewish people. Nonetheless, as the Gemara is going to say soon, he was punished that he became sick for a while after that, because after all, he still shouldn't have. They're forty Yiddish kids, and he still shouldn't have. Okay. The pasuk continues. Vatetzena shtayim duber min hayar. Two bears came out of the forest. And they broke open, they killed of them 42 children. So why daf? So first of all, what? Why daf for 42? We're going to talk about this. Why daf for two? Okay, that's the Gemara doesn't really focus on why there were two bears. The Gemara is going to focus more on why 42 of them were killed. But first, Rab and Shmuel argue what exactly was the nes over here. Chad am a nes, chad am a nes b'seich nes. One says there was only one nest, and the other one says there was a nest inside a nest. Manda Omen nest, the one who says that there was one nest, Yar Hava, up until that point there had been a forest there, Dubim Loy Havu, but up until that point there hadn't been bears in the forest. And the reason is, he said that he has to assume there were no bears, because otherwise these kids would have been afraid to walk around there. If it's known to be infested with bears, they wouldn't stand be walking over there. So therefore, that implies that until now, there's a forest there, but there's no bears. So therefore, therefore, the nest was that Hashem created bears, that Hashem brought bears there on the spot to kill them.
Usually during the day, we have a large crowd of people that are bears on
the head. Nonetheless, though, the fact is, we're saying that, yeah. Umanda om a nest, besides nest, the one who says there was a nest within a nest, lo yar hava v'lo dubim hava. Up until that point, there hadn't been a forest and there hadn't been bears. In modern Hebrew, by the way, they use the expression lo dubim v'lo yar to mean, like you say, like in Yiddish, nishtig shtoig and nishtig floig, and the whole thing never happened. But that's not what the Gemara means over here. He's not saying, chas v'shalom, the nest never happened. Fakir, he's saying there was nothing there until now, neither forest nor bears, and Hashem created them both on the spot over there.
So there's only water there.
Well, no, there wasn't water. There was a road. There was a road.
That's the water where the kids were.
No, that was before that. He had purified the water. Yeah. Okay. Anyway, so the Gemara asks, according to that opinion, so why does Hashem have to do that? Let him just bring over there bears and not a forest. And the answer is to be isi. Then they would be afraid. Who's they would be afraid? Rashi says it means the bears. If there's no forest for the bears to run off into, they would be afraid to attack people. So therefore, according to that, Hashem had to create a forest on the spot there also in order that the bears shouldn't be afraid to attack them. Marsha says actually what we mean is we mean the kids. If there hadn't been a forest over there and the bears were just walking around in the open road, then the kids would have seen them from afar and they would have run away. So therefore, Hashem had to create a forest so the bears can be concealed until they attack them. All right. The Gemara says, why dafka 42? So the Gemara says,
bears could be something else.
Yeah, whatever, the Hashem chose bears in this case. Amar Rav Chanina, I think actually Mephoshim say that maybe it has something to do with the fact since they called him Kereach, baldy, like he has no hair. A bear particularly has a lot of hair, a lot of fur, so therefore Hashem chose that as the thing. Okay. Because of the 42 korbanos that Balak Melech Moav brought when he and Bilam were trying to curse the Jews, because of that, generations later, 42 Jewish children were killed by the bears. In other words, even though Balak wasn't able to accomplish what he wanted to at the time, but still it had an effect. And later on, when you had kids who, like we said before, they were born, they were conceived by Avera, and they had no trace of mitzvahs, etc., then there was room for the klala to land on them. So the Gemara asks, Aini, is that so? You're telling me that that was Balak's reward? A person should always be occupied with Torah and mitzvahs, even if he does it shaloi lishma. Shematoch shaloi lishma bo lishma. From doing it shaloi lishma, he'll eventually come to doing it lishma. And we see it as an example. We see in the schus of the 42 korbanos that Balak Melech Moav brought, you have three times he and Balak, he and Bilam tried to curse the Jewish people. Each time Bilam tells him, build 7 mizbechas and bring on each one a par and an aisle. So therefore, there are 14 korbanos in each of 3 places, makes 42. Anyway, he had the schus that Rus descended from him, and in turn that Shloima descended from Rus. Where it says that Shloima brought 1,000 korbanos at a time, so therefore, so that was his reward, that he brought korbanos shaloi lishma, and in the end he had a descendant Shloima who brought korbanos lishma. And how do we know that they're related? Because va'amar Rabbi Yosi ben Choni, Rus. Rus was the daughter of Eglon, who in turn was the son of Balak. Tosfos elsewhere says that literally means son and daughter. There were generations between them, but we mean that she was a descendant of Eglon, the king of Moab, who in Sefer Shoftim, he stands up in Hashem's honor, and then Ehud stabs him, but he stood up. Ehud told him, I have a message to you from Hashem, and he stood up in respect. So therefore, we have the schus that Rus was his descendant, and he in turn was a descendant of Balak. So we see, therefore, that was Balak's reward.
Did he actually have a message from Hashem?
No, he was using it as an excuse to stab him because he had been oppressing the Jewish people for many years. But the point is, he didn't know that. Anyway, so the point is, in other words, that was Balak's reward. By the way, in other places in Shas, the Gemara distinguishes between different kinds of Shaloi Lishma. Of Shaloi Lishma. There's Shaloi Lishma because, for example, I want to be famous, I want to be called a Talmid Chacham, and the Shaloi Lishma, I want to use the Torah and the mitzvahs as a way of attacking other people. Now, wasn't Balak doing that? He's trying to attack the Jewish people. So Tosfos and some other places in Shas explain, including Udi and Arma Sechta, explains that not really. His main purpose was that he thought the Jews were a danger to him. So it's not that he wasn't doing it so much to attack them, but like to remove what he saw as a potential harm. So therefore, that can be considered Shaloi Lishma, that brings to Lishma, and the result was that Shloima descends from him.
If wasn't for...
We have a lot of ground to cover, yeah. The Gemara answers, Tavose mir klolahavi, that's true. Nonetheless, though, he did have intentions for Klala, and therefore, so it's true, you really have both. On the one hand, you have he brought Korbanos, Shaloi Lashem Shemayim, but Shaloi Lashma, and eventually there came from that Lashma, but there is also, he did mean for a curse against the Jewish people, and eventually it came about now when these kids were killed. Again, it wasn't able to have an effect as long as the Jewish people are learning Torah and keeping mitzvahs, but once you have these kids who have none of the above, then there's room for the klala to land on them. Getting back to Elisha, the pasuk says a few psukim earlier when they're telling him about the problem with the water. By Yomru Ansher Ir Elisha, the people of the city said to Elisha, "Hine no Moshe va'ir toiv kasher jenu roya v'gamer." Look, the settlement of the city is very good, as my master sees. But they go on to say the water is no good. So the Gemara asks, so how does the first half of the pasuk fit with the second? If the water is bad and it's causing people to miscarry and to get sick, then what's the good of the city? What do I mean, Moshe va'ir toiv? What's so good about it if the whole water supply over there is messed up? This is an example of you have Hashem makes the place where a person lives be graceful and beautiful to him, even if objectively it's not. So it's true. If another person came and looked at that city, he'd say, why does anybody bother living there? It's a horrible place. But Hashem made it that people live in a certain place. Hashem gives them a natural desire and then makes the place seem beautiful in their eyes, even if objectively there are problems with it. And Omer Rabbi Yechanan, Shloi Shechina, saying, in fact, there are three kinds of unnatural chen like that. Chen Mokam al Yoshuv, the fact that a place seems beautiful to the people who live there. Chen Ishal Baila, the fact that a woman is beautiful to her husband, again, even if objectively she's not beautiful. And Chen Mecha, Chamekochoi, or Loitchoi, really it's supposed to say, and the beauty of a purchase to the one who bought it, meaning, again, you may have somebody buys something, objectively, it's not very good, but Hashem makes it that he should like it because that. And the point is, each of these things is necessary in order for the world to function. For example, Marsha points out, as far as places to live, we learned yesterday that Adam Arishan decided in advance where everybody, what places should be settled and what places should not, but he didn't decide who's going to live where. So Hashem wants that a certain place should be settled, so he made it then that people who settle there like the place, even though objectively they should not. And the same thing with a wife. If you had only the ones who are objectively beautiful got married, then most people would never get married. So therefore, Hashem makes it that they feel that their wife is graceful and beautiful, even if objectively she's not. And the same thing with things that are bought and sold. Okay. Tana Rabbanan, we learn in a Braisa, Shloisha Chaloyin Chola Elisha. three times in his life Elisha got sick. One is because, again, because he incited bears against the children. So even though we're saying before he had a valid reason for it, they made fun of him in a way that people are now going to disrespect the VM, and they were going to order him in a mitzvah and so on and so forth. Nevertheless, they're fourth Yiddish, they're fourth Yidden, and he shouldn't have done that. The echot shadoch for the Gehazi b'shteyadayim. Another one is because he pushed Gehazi away with both hands, meaning, as the Gemara is going to explain soon, the story that when Gehazi took. So let's recap the story briefly. The Gemara is going to give it in a little detail over here. You have the story again. You have the story of Naaman. We had Saras. It's after the Parshas Tazria. So he goes to Kitzur Amaisi. He goes to Elisha. Elisha tells him to dip seven times in the Yarden, and then he's cured. He's overjoyed. He wants to give Elisha lots of gold and silver and whatnot. And Elisha turns it down. Then Gehazi says to himself, why should all that money go and stay by the Arami? And he runs after Naaman, claims that new Talmidim just came to the yeshiva and Elisha sent me to get money for them. And Naaman ends up giving him. And then when he comes back to the Beis Medrash, then Elisha curses him with Tzaras. And he says, you and your descendants will have Tzaras forever. So that's Durcha B'Shtei Yadayim. He pushed him away with both hands. Like, in other words, as opposed to, the Gemara is going to say soon, you really need to have Yamin V'Karevus to smell Durcha. You may push away the person with the left hand, but you first have to bring them close with the right hand, give them an opportunity to do tshuva. And Elisha didn't do that. He just pushed Gehazi away and said, you're completely rejected. And therefore, for that, at some point in his life, Elisha became sick. And the third one was a natural thing that eventually Elisha passed away. The pasuk says that Elisha became sick with the sickness from which he eventually died. So Rashi explains the fact that it says chola and cholya and asher yomusboy, that implies three different sicknesses. So chola means he was sick once in his life. Cholya means a second sickness, and asher yomusboy means the third one that he died from. So since we don't find anything else during this career that Elisha did wrong except for these things, therefore the Gemara attributes the sicknesses to these things. By the way, the Gemara mentions in Bava Metzia that until Elisha's time, there was nobody who ever recovered from a dangerous sickness. So therefore, the implication would be that Elisha would have died even the first time or the second time from having the bears attack the children or from pushing away Gehazi, except that his schusim protected him and he was able to continue living. But yeah. So Tanan Rabbanan, we learn in a Braisa, Lo'olam te smel doicha v'yamin v'karevis. Always the left hand should push away and the right hand should bring close. The right hand is stronger, it's the hand you use more, so therefore it implies, in other words, that mainly you should be pulling close. When you have to push away, it should be with the weaker hand, with the left hand. In other words, don't ever reject a Talmud or whatever just completely and tell him, go away, I don't want to ever see you again. Give him an opening for tshuva. Not like Elisha who pushed away Gehazi with both hands, and not like Yeshua ben Prachya pushed away one of his Talmidim with his both hands. Now here it just says La'echam mitalmidim. The older Gemaras don't even have this part at all, because it's talking about Yeshua Noitzri, who, as we'll talk in a second, some say is the same one as the one the Christians believe in. But in any case, the correct Girsa, that's an uncensored Gemara, is not Echam mitalmidim, but Yeshua Noitzri. Now there is a big machlokas rishonim whether Yeshua Noitzri of this story is in fact the same as Yoizel, the one that the Goyim believe in. For example, the Ramban, now here we have, he's in the time of Rabbi Yeshua ben Prachya, who's 100 years before the one that they believe, before the one that they claim to believe in. Yeshua ben Prachya was in the middle of the second Beis Hamikdash. They place him about 100 years later. The Ramban says it's actually the same person, and the Goyim deliberately dated him earlier because they wanted to be able to claim that the Beis Hamikdash was destroyed as punishment for not believing. On the other hand, the number of Rishonim, Rabbi Yechiel of Paris, when he had to debate against the Goyim, the Meiri in his Sefer and various other Rishonim say that no, in fact, they're two different people. The one of our Gemara over here, Taka, lived 100 years earlier, and then 100 years later, you have the one that the Christians believe in, and then he's not the one, according to that, he's not the one mentioned in the Gemara. But again, according to the Ramban, it is the same one. Anyway, the censors obviously thought that it is the same one, so therefore they took out this whole part. In older Gemaras, you won't find it at all. They finally put it back in newer Gemaras. So the Gemara says, Elisha Maihi, what's the story with Elisha pushing away Gehazi? So like this, so when Gehazi comes to Naaman and claims that new Talmidim have just come and I have to get money for them. So Vayoma Naaman, Hoyo Kach Kikarayim, please be willing to take two kicker. Gehazi is asking for one kicker of silver. Naaman says, by all means, take two. So Gehazi takes it and he puts it away, stores it away, and then he comes into the Beis Medrash. And it says a few psukim later, by Yomer Elov, when Elisha asks Gehazi, where have you been? And Gehazi says, no place special. By Yomer Elov, and Elisha says to him, Loi libi holach, don't you think my heart went with you? Don't you realize, in other words, that I know exactly what happened? Kasha hofach ishmael mekabte lekrasecha, when the man, meaning Naaman, turned backwards from his chariot to see you, meaning Elisha was bothered by the fact that now the Kiddush Hashem has been undone. He had cured Naaman and said, I'm not going to take payment, and it made a tremendous Kiddush Hashem. Now Naaman is going to think that Elisha only did it for money. So he says, Ha'es l'kachas is a kesef. Do you think that it's now the time to be taking silver? V'l'kachas begodim v'zeisim achromim, and to take clothing and olive groves and vineyards, with sonu vaka and cattle and sheep and cattle, va'avodim u'shvachas and servants and maidservants. So the Gemara interjects, and we shock with Kula Haiwan, and Gehazi didn't take all those eight things. Hai kesef u'gadim u'shvachil. Sachakol, the pasuk says, all he took from Naaman was silver and a couple of changes of clothing. So Omer Rabbi Yitzchak, but Oisa Shah Hoya Elisha Oisik Mishmona Shratzim. What happened was, when Gehazi walked into the Beis Medrash, Elisha at that point was teaching about Shmona Shratzim, the Perek in Masechta Shabbos, Rashi explains, that begins Shmona Shratzim, that talks about the Dinim. Now we know you have the Shmona Shratzim, or they're also to eat, of course. They're also the only eight of creatures in the class of Shratzim that are Mutame when they're dead. But the Perek of Shabbos begins over there with the dinim of them as far as a certain din of Hilchas Shabbos, as far as wounding them, as far as bruising them, that a person is chayev for those, unlike, for example, for other small creatures. And the Gemara distinguishes over there because these creatures have skins, so the blood collects underneath. The other small creatures do not. Whatever the case, Elisha was teaching that din at that point when Gehazi walked into this medrash.
You were on Shabbos or you were during the week?
No, we're talking about during the week. If a person bruises such a creature on Shabbos, then he's chayev for the malacha. He's on Shabbos. He's chayev for the malacha of shofet because he calls blood to get collected under the skin as a bruise. Anyway, so Elisha was teaching that point when Gehazi walked into this medrash. Omaloi, so he says, Rosha, he gear ace little schar shmona shratzim. And now the time has come. It can be a rhetorical question. Do you think that now is the time to take the reward of the shmona shratzim? Meaning, you're thinking because you learned Torah from me, including this din of the shmona shratzim, that therefore you're entitled to a reward in this world, and therefore you took the silver and the clothing. And so that's why he mentions eight things. He doesn't mean literally that Gehazi took all those eight things, but now with that money, you're able to buy all those eight things. You're able to use some of that money and clothing to buy olives and then to buy olive groves and then vineyards and so forth. And you think that you're going to get the reward for the Shmona Shratzim. Instead, the Tzaras Naaman, Tidbak B'chor, Zarach Ol Olam, the Tzaras of Naaman will stick to you and your descendants forever. So that's the Dochag Shtei Yadayim, that he pushed him away with both hands rather than giving him any opportunity to do tshuva. And sure enough, later on, when it says "Va'bon Noshim Hoyu Mitzrayim," when it says it's an Aftorah of Mitzrayda, of Parshas Mitzrayda, when it says four men were Mitzrayim outside the gate of Shomer, and Amar Abiyechan and Gehazi Shloishes Bonav, that means Gehazi and his three children. Why were his children punished as well? Because they helped him out. Is because they helped him hide away the loot is one reason. Anyway, the point is, so that was Elisha pushed him away completely, and therefore Elisha, even though Elisha had a point with it, nevertheless, he shouldn't have been so harsh, and therefore, as we said before, he became sick for a while as a punishment for that. Next, the Gemara continues. Later on, the Psukim, it says, Vayelech Elisha Damesek, or actually, the Pasuk actually says, Vayovay Elisha Damesek. So the question is, Loma Holach, what did he go for? Now, the Psukim over there, this is in Melochim Bey's Peret Fest, it describes how when Elisha was in Damascus, he meets up over there with Chazoil, who at that time was a minister of the king of Aram, and he tells him the king of Aram is soon going to die, and you're going to be the next king, etc. But the Gemara is bothered by that usually when it says that someone went someplace, it says, Vayelech, that he went to the place, and then eventually it says Vayavoy. Over here it just says Vayavoy Elisha Damnesek without saying that he went first. So that implies that he went there for some other purpose, and while he was there, he met up with Chazoril and all of that happened. So, Lama Holach, what did he go to Damnesek in the first place for? He went over there to try and get Gehazi to do tshuva. Gehazi had moved to Damascus because since he's in Bethsaida, he's not allowed inside any city in Eretz Israel. So he went to Damascus to live among the Goyim over there, where therefore they won't bother him for it. We see that Naaman was living at home with Tzaraas and everybody's around him, and he himself was bothered by the Tzaraas, which is why he went to Elisha. But we see they didn't make him go outside the city because the Goyim don't have those halachas. So therefore Gehazi had gone there. So now, Elisha went to Damascus to get Gehazi to do tshuva, v'loi chaza, but he didn't do tshuva. Omaloi, because Elisha tells him, chazer b'cha, do tshuva. Omaloi, Gehazi told him, no. Kach mekublani v'imcha, I have the Kabbalah from you, kol mi shechotev, hechti yisarabim, anybody who not only did averus, but caused many other people to do averus, ein maspikin biyode, lasis tshuva, Hashem will not give him an opportunity to do tshuva. Now, it doesn't mean he can't do tshuva. It means Hashem is not, usually Hashem opens up opportunities for a person, a bolitar, messiah, he or not, he or the person has to put in all the effort himself. But nevertheless, as the Alter Rebbe phrases it in Tanya, im dochak v'nichna, so he pushes his way in and does tshuva, then Hashem will accept him. But Gehazi was using it as an excuse, as the Gemara is going to explain in a second how we see that he's machti as a rabbin, but Gehazi used it as an excuse to say that he's not going to do tshuva.
Even though he came to help him.
Right. So, yeah. So my Ovad, so what did Gehazi do that was machti as a rabbin? Ikadamri, some say, even she'evas tolol el-chates yurovam, he put magnets on the chet of Yerovam, on the egle azov that Yerovam had made, and he suspended it between heaven and earth. In other words, so he put magnets and attached to the ego and attached to the walls of the womb or whatever in such a way that it made the ego float in the air. So now, therefore, that caused many more people to think it must be a godly thing and we should worship it. So therefore, he caused that more people are worshiping that egel azov. The Ikadami Shem Chokok La'apuma. Others say that he carved down a name of Hashem in the mouth of the eagle. And it was announcing the Aseres HaDibros, particularly the first two Dibros. I am Hashem, you should have no other gods before me. So again, that caused a lot of more people to be misled and think this really is a representation of Hashem and we should worship it. The Ikadami Rabbonan Docha Mikamei. Others say what Gehazi did, that he was Machti Yisarabim, he pushed away potential Tambidim from coming to learn by Elisha. And we see that, so therefore he prevented them from being able to learn by Elisha and become better Talmid Chachamim, better Jews, like they should be. Dichtiv, and we find in the Pasuk, right after Gehazi was pushed away, right after it says he got Tzaraas and he left, the next Pasuk is, Vayeru bnei Neviim al Elisha, the Talmidim of the Neviim said to Elisha, Hine na'amokim asher anachnu yoshim l'chom l'fanach tzari menu, look, please, the place where we're sitting in front of you, the Beis Medrash, is too crowded for us. Now, why all of a sudden now are they commenting on that's crowded? Mikal, the Adahidna, Lahabadachu, implying that up till now it wasn't crowded because Gehazi was taking it on himself to prevent people from coming to the Beis Medrash. Now that he left, now anybody who wants to come learn is coming to learn, so therefore the Beis Medrash became very crowded. So we see that till then he was pushing people away. Okay. So that's the story with Elisha and Gehazi. And again, the Gemara is saying that nevertheless, Elisha was too harsh with Gehazi. He should have been more gentle with him. Like this, he pushed him away completely, and Gehazi went on to do even worse things. So now, Yeshua ben Prachya Maihi, what's the story with Yeshua ben Prachya pushing away Oser Ish? So like this, Kedahava Kokoto Yane Malkal Rabbanon. There was a time when Yane Amelech, one of the kings of the Chashmonaim, was killing the Chachamim. Yeah, the whole story is in Kedushin. There was questions about Yane's mother, that she there was a claim that she was a Shvuya and therefore that she's possible to be married to a Koyan, in which case Yane wouldn't be a Koyan, it would be a Cholo. Akitzer, Yane was incited against the Chachamim by the Tzedukim over there, and they ended up killing many of the Chachamim. Anyway, so Shimon ben Shotach atminu achse. Shimon ben Shotach was hidden by his sister because his sister was Shloimtzion, the queen, the wife of Yanai. So she was able to hide him. So Yanai doesn't kill him. Rabbi Yeshua ben Prachya ozel orak l'achsanir shemitzrayim. Meanwhile, Rabbi Yeshua ben Prachya, what that time was the Nosi. This is you have in Pirkei Avos. You have the Zugers over there. So you have Rabbi Yeshua ben Prachya and Nitai Harabeli. Then the next generation, you have Yehudim and Tabai and Shimon ben Shotach. So right now we're talking about in that generation, you had Yeshua ben Prachya was the Rebbe, Shimon ben Shotach was the Talmud. The Talmud was able to hide because of his sister hit him, but Rabbi Shimon ben Prachya, the Nasi, Ozel Orak Lachsan Yosham Mitzrayim, he ran away to Alexandria in Egypt, where he'd be safe. Ki Hava Shlomo, when there was Shalom, when things calmed down, Shalach Le Shim Ben Shatach, so Shim Ben Shatach, his Talmud, sent him a message suggesting that he should return. Mini Yerushalayim Irakodesh Loch Alexan Yosham Mitzrayim, the message from me, Yerushalayim Irakodesh, to you, Alexandria in Egypt. Achoisi, my sister, and Alexandria deserved to be called the sister of Yerushalayim. It had an enormous Jewish community. Alexandria in those days was like the New York of the Jewish world. So like many, many Jews lived there, and therefore he's calling it out of respect, my sister, as though you're like on an equal level in a certain sense to Yerushalayim.
That's why people call the children Dal Tang Alexandria.
No, that was something else. That's because of Alexander the Great when he met Shimon HaTzadik. I mean, Alexandria, the city, is also named for Alexander, but yeah, there's not really that direct connection. Anyway. So he says, Achoisi, my sister, Bali Shori Besoichet, my husband, meaning my Nasi, is living among you, Rani Yosheves Shemema, and I'm sitting desolate. In other words, saying that it's time for you to come back. You should be in Yerushalayim. Omar, so when Yeshua and Prachi receives the message, it says, Shmamina Havala Shlomo, I see, reading between the lines, there must be Shalom, and it's safe for me to return. Dota sort of showed him, in fact, explains, by the way, it's not like officially Yanai had ceased his persecution. It's only in practice, you know, there's how long can he be persecuting and killing Chachamim? Things eventually had calmed down. So that's why Shimon Shatach is only sending him a coded message. And that's why Rabbi Shimon Prachi is only saying, I can see reading between the lines that there's Shalom. Shimon Shatach couldn't outright write to him, there's Shalom, come return, because the fact is there wasn't. It was just like a temporary truce. Anyway. So, ki also, as Rabbi Yeshua ben Prachi was coming back, iklalahu ushpiza, he stopped off at a certain inn, kom kamayu biyikora shapir, the people over there in the people over there in the inn were standing up in front of him and honoring him, Rabbi Yeshua ben Prachi, very much.
They recognized him.
They recognized him, yeah. Avdila Yekora Tova, and they were doing tremendous covenant for him. Yosef become a shtamach. So Rabbi Shimon Prachi was sitting and praising. Kama no achsanya zu. How beautiful is this achsanya? Meaning, in other words, that the people of this inn, the word achsanya, can Rashi actually. So Rashi over here and in Sanhedrin actually explains a little bit differently. Here Rashi explains that. So over there, Rashi explains the word achsanya means the inn, but then we're going to say that the Talmud, Yeshua Noitzri, misunderstood and thought he's talking about the woman innkeeper. Here Rashi says all along, Rabbi Shimon Prachia was talking about the woman, but he meant she's how good she is in her meisim. She's acting in such a beautiful way. Anyway. So one of the Talmidim, again, in uncensored Gemara, it says that Yeshua Noitzri says to him, Rebbe, a neho trutos, her eyes are round. In other words, what are you saying? She's beautiful. So either, in other words, Rebbe Shimon Prachi was praising the inn and the people in it, and this guy takes it wrongly and takes the word, or then takes the word ushpiza and takes the word achsanya to mean the woman innkeeper, or that Rebbe Shimon Prachi attacking meant the woman, but he meant how nice she is in her meisim, and this Talmud misunderstands it to mean how beautiful she is. So what do you mean she's beautiful? Her eyes are wet. He says, Rosha, that's what you're involved with, looking at a married woman. So he took out 400 shofars and put them in Cherem. In other words, they had 400 people blow shofars to announce that this Talmud, Yeshua Noitzri, is now in Cherem. So that's the Doch B'Shtei Yadayim. Anyway, continues the story. B'Shamtei, so he put him in Cherem. Every day after that, Yeshu was coming to Rabbi Yeshua to ask for mechila. And Rabbi Yeshua ben Prachi was not accepting him. Yom Echad have a Kori Krishma. One day, Rabbi Yeshua ben Prachi was in the middle of saying Krishma. Also lekame, and at that point, Yeshu came in front of him. Have a bedaita lekabule. By that time, Rabbi Yeshua ben Prachi was thinking already to reaccept him, but. So he made a motion with his hand that fine, basically wait till I finish Krishma and then I'll accept you. Yeshu misunderstood the gesture and thought it meant that Yeshua is pushing him away completely. So now he gave up. He went and set up a brick and started worshiping it as an avodah zarah. So afterwards, Omalei Chazur B'cha, later on, Rabbi Shimon Prachi tells him, do tshuva. Omalei gives him the same answer as Gechazi did to Elisha. Anybody who sins and causes the many people to sin, Hashem won't give him an opportunity to do tshuva. Again, this was only an excuse because in reality, if he had made the effort to do tshuva, Hashem would have accepted him. But where do we see that? It was that he caused many people to do aveiros. The Amar, because we say in a brisa, Yeshua noitzri kishif behisis v'idiach behechdias Yisrael. He did magic. And he was Mesa Samadiah. He convinced people to worship Avodah Zarah. And therefore, he caused many Jews to sin. But we see, in other words, that all of this was triggered by Rabbi Yeshua ben Prachi pushing him away. So the Gemara finishes off. Tanya, Rav Shimon ben Elazar, Yetzer, as far as the urge for Tashmish, Tinek, or child, Veisha, or wife, all of them, Tesmel Doichavi and Min Makarevis, you all have to have with all of them, the left hand pushes away and the right hand brings close. In other words, again, particularly with them, Rashi explains, the Yetzer of Tashmish, you don't want to completely reject it. You need to do Puruvu after all. On the other hand, if you bring it too close, then you're going to end up where you're going to end up using it inappropriately. As far as a child, same thing. You push him away completely. Chas v'shalom, he might go and commit suicide. And a wife also, she might go out with Talbus Rah. She might go and behave and do znus or whatever. So with all of them, you have to be careful. You have to bring close with the right. And to the extent you need to push him away, should be with the weaker hand with the left. Okay. Mishnah says, Nimtza horeg ad shel ner for ha'egla. If they find the killer, here we're talking about still the body that was found outside the city, for which they brought the egla, Rufa. So if the killer was found, actually near for her egla, before the egla was decapitated, then fine. The animal was mutter b'hana, tates of a tira b'edu, it can go out and graze in the herd with the rest of the animals. Rashi points out not everybody agrees with that. There's actually a Gemara in Krisus that says there are opinions that say that once the animal is brought down into the Nachal Eisan, then already it becomes also b'hana, even if they don't end up having to go through the procedure. But our Mishnah is not saying that. Anyway. If it happens after the animal is decapitated, to cover then you still bury it in its place. It's also bahana shall suffik bav submit chilasa, because after all, the egla rufa is only brought to begin with because of the suffik. Very well, kipra sfeik of a hochala, so it accomplished kapara for the suffik. In other words, that's it. Up until that point, they hadn't found the killer, therefore they had to do the egla rufa. Now the fact that they found him, fine. He himself needs to be executed, but still, that doesn't take away from the fact that up until now, the egla rufa had accomplished a certain kapara for them. So therefore, so keeper sveka, so it was machapra on the subject, mahochala, and it's gone. In other words, that's it. It accomplished its purpose. Next, continues the mission. And therefore, egla v'achakach nimtza horeg. If they decapitated the calf, and then afterwards they found the killer, harezi yahoreg, they still executed. Rashi points out on the pasuk, you shouldn't think that maybe once they did the procedure with the egla rufa, that's it. It's a complete kapara, and we don't have to deal with the guy anymore. No, the pasuk says that no, you still have to kill him. Eidechad Omer Roisia Sahorek. Suppose one witness says, I saw the killer, and another one contradicts him and says, you didn't see. For example, this person that you're accusing was someplace else at the time. Or Ishai Meris Isi, the Ishai Meris Loiraisa. If one woman says, I saw him, and saw him means I can recognize who he is, and another one says, you didn't see, Hoyu Ofen, they would still do the Eglad Rufa, because the point is, the mission is going to establish that if anybody knows who the killer was, we don't do the Eglah Rufa. But here, where you have one person, one aide contradicting the other aide, then you don't have any aiders over here. So therefore, you're back to square one. Also, if one aide says, I saw, and two contradict them and say, you didn't see, also, how you're open, then also they would do the Eglah Rufa. The Gemara will talk about what the chiddush of that part is. On the other hand, if two Adam said, we saw him and we recognize him, and one says you didn't, then they don't do the Eglah Rufa, because now you have Adam that know who the killer is. The whole point of the Eglah Rufa is when we don't know who it is. So now the Mishnah continues. Once murderers became more prevalent, butla Eglah Rufa, then they had to stop doing the Eglah Rufa. That is specifically Mishabar Eliezer ben Dinai, specifically when Eliezer, or Elazar, it says in Mishnayos, ben Dinai came along. He lived towards the end of the second Mishnah. He's actually mentioned, Josephus mentions him in his histories as well. He was a famous robber. He was a famous leader of robbers at that time, about 30 or 40 years before the Churban. 20 or 30 years really before the Churban, whatever, and he was known to have committed lots of murders. So therefore, at that point, there's a high likelihood when we see a dead body, we know it was from him and his gang. Utchina ben Prisha Hoyanikra. He was actually at one point called Tchina ben Prisha, which is, Maushar explains that that was an alias he used, so people wouldn't have been ordered to that, you know, because people, so people should know who he is. Chozir l'kroise, ben Haratzchan. Later on, though, people called him ben Haratzchan, the murderous person, meaning, in other words, people weren't fooled by his calling himself by a Chassidish name, Tchina ben Prisha, having to do with Prisha, so they realized him for what he is, and they called him ben Haratzchan. There's different explanations exactly what this phrase means in the Mishnah, and there's a few different explanations, but whatever, the point is, in other words, Yeshayim, that actually Tchina ben Prisha and Elazar ben Nai are two different people. Whatever the case, the point is, there was a period there towards the end of the second Beis Mikdash when there were lots of murders going on, and therefore they couldn't do the Egla Aruch anymore. Mistama, I mean, we should still realize, of course, you know, when we say a lot, you know, relatively speaking, I mean, you know, it's still been compared to what you have in, you know, in Chicago and in some places nowadays with people killing each other. But Misharabu Hamanafim, once adulterers became more prevalent, people are committing adultery, Posku Mayim Amorim, then they stopped doing the Mayim Amorim, the Mayim Amorim, the Meisota. Rabbi Yechon ben Zakkai, Hifsikon, specifically it was Rabbi Yechon ben Zakkai who said to stop doing it. That's what I was going to discuss. Yeah, Shenema, because the pasuk says, "Loi efkod abneseichem kisis nena." I will not look after anymore. I will not efkod can also mean to punish. I will not punish the soldiers. Albneseichem on your daughter's kisis nena when they're committing adultery. Va'alkaleseichem and on your daughter's-in-law kisina afna when they commit adultery. Kihem v'goimer, because the pasuk goes on to say that they imazonis yiforedu, which means that the husbands are being mizaneh, yuforedu, meloshin pered, Rashi says, meloshin a mule, so the husbands themselves are being mizaneh, and the whole point is, the meisota works only when the husband himself is not guilty of such avedus, as we'll talk about in the Gemara. So once it started becoming more prevalent that people are doing znus, then therefore they have to stop the meisota, because it's not going to work anyway. Continues, since we're talking on that topic, the Gemara mentions, by the way, other things that ceased at some point in Jewish history. Mishemes Yosef ben Ezer, Ish Tzreda, but Yosef ben Yehuda, or really it's supposed to be Yochanan, Ish Yerushalayim, once those two Chachamim passed away, who are the first of the Zugas, Botlu HaEshkoilus. At that point, the Eshkoilus ceased to exist. Eshkoilus stands for Isha Kol Boy, a man who has everything in him, meaning up until that point, they were talking, they were a little over 1,000 years after Matan Torah, the Torah, Shabbat Peh, was given over perfectly from generation to generation, and there was no Machloikus that lasted. If there was ever a Machloikus, they went to the Sanhedrin and they got it resolved. In Yosef ben Ezer, and Yosef ben Ezer, and Yosef ben Yochanan's time, Machloikus began. So the Torah was not being given over and learned as perfectly as it had been before. But up until that point, they were the Ashkolos. They were literally Ashkolos means clusters of grapes, but it stands for Isha Kolboy, a person who has everything of Torah in him. Shenema, and we find a pasuk that Ashkolos is used to refer to tzaddikim, Ein Eshkolech, all the pasuk says there's no cluster of grapes to eat, Bikura Ivsa Nafshi, my soul desires the first ripe figs, and the next pasuk continues, Ovar Chosim and Oretz Chosidim are gone from the world. So therefore, so we see that Ashkolos refers to such people. Next, continues the Mishnah, Yochanan Kohen Gadol Hever Hodoyas HaMaiser. Yochanan Kohen Gadol, who he was, there were a number of different Kohenim Gdolim in the time of the second Beis Mikdash. Named Yochanan, there's different opinions who it was. Was it the father of Matisyahu? We say in our Nisim, Matisyahu ben Yochanan Kohen Gadol, so does it refer to him? Is it a son of Matisyahu? Is it a grandson of Matisyahu? Whatever, one of them. Anyway, Hever, it's Yeshayim, it's also the one who became a Tzaduki after 80 years. Anyway, Hever Hodoyas HaMaiser, he took away that they shouldn't say Vidri Maiser anymore, for reasons that we'll learn in the Gemara tomorrow. He also made stop the ma'urin and the noikvin. Ma'urin means the ones who wake up. Noikvin means the ones who hit. And the Gemara will explain what that. And the Gemara will explain on Dachan and Ches what those mean. Ad yom of hayapatish makav Yerushalayim, up until his times, hammers would strike in Yerushalayim. During on Chalom Moed, blacksmiths would be working because they figure it's a dover over. It's something that otherwise the work is going to be lost. We're going to lose our opportunity to do this, and such a thing is allowed on Chalom Moed. But he said that no, because the noise of hammers of blacksmiths is very noticeable, and therefore it's not the kavodik to Chalom Moed, even if they have a heter for dover over, but still not to do such loud work.
Dabra Avod would be the food, but...
No, Dabra Avod applies to other things as well. It applies to other kinds of work where if you don't do it during Chol HaMoed, you're going to lose the opportunity. So you have a heter to do it on Chol HaMoed, but he said not loud music, not loud work like that. In his times, no longer did anybody need to ask about Dmai, meaning up until now, you'd have to ask, was this food Maisir or not? He made the whole concept of Dmai and the idea that you take Maisir from Mitmisopik, and that way, you don't need to ask the Amoritz anymore and see whether you can rely on it. You just treat it as Dmai and you take off Maisir from it and then and so forth.
This has good things and bad things.
So, but, yeah. Okay, so the Gemara starts off. Turn it up on. Minayim she nerfah egla. How do we know, as we said in the Mishnah, that even if the egla was decapitated, v'achakach nimsa ahodig, and then we find the killer, she'ein poterasoi. So the fact that the egla was killed doesn't capture the murderer. Shenet tamad loyma. Therefore, the pasuk says, v'la'oretz la'yichupa la'doma she'shubach ba, ki'im b'dam shoyfer. The pasuk says, for the land, and the blood that was spilled in it will not be atoned only with the blood of the one who spilled it, meaning you still have to execute the guy. Rashi on the Pasuk, where there brings it actually from the fact, the end of the part of the Egla Rufa, it says, Va'ata tivara doma noki mikribecha, you should clean up the innocent blood from among you, meaning that you still have a responsibility to kill the killer if you find him. Okay. Next, the Mishnah had said, we said if one aide says I saw the killer and another aide says that he didn't. So the Gemara says time of the makishle. So why are we saying that we still go ahead with the Egla Rofa? Apparently, because the Mishnah is implying only because you have a second aide that contradicts him. Holy makishle, implying that if nobody contradicts him, aid echad mehaman, then one aid would be believed. And once we have one aid who says I know who the killer is, then that means we don't do the Egla Rofa. So Manohani Mili, where do we know that from? The Tanan Rabbanan, we learn in a Braisa. The Pasuk says, Loi noida mihi kohu, it's not known who killed him. That implies, Han noida mihi kohu, implying if it is known who killed him, I feel like Echad b'seif ha'olam, even if there's only one person at the end of the world who knows, Loi ha'ya ofrin, then they wouldn't do the Egla Rofa. Rabbi Akiva Omer, Rabbi Akiva says another point. Minayin the Sanhedrin shero echad shahorak sanefesh. How do we know also that suppose the Sanhedrin themselves sees a person who killed the Ein Makir no, so they don't recognize who he is. Now, unlike in the case of the Edom of our Mishnah, we're saying that the Ed says Reisi Ose means I can recognize it. Here we have something else. Rabbi Akiva is talking about the members of the Sanhedrin saw the guy kill, but they don't recognize him, whether he was wearing a mask or whatever. They don't know who he is. Anyway, Shaloi ha'yu ofin, how do we know that in that case they also don't do the Egla Rofa? Tamad leimav, einein uloi ro'u. Therefore, the pasuk says that the members of the Beis Din have to be able to say, our eyes did not see the haloi ro'u. Here they did see, so therefore that blocks us from doing the Egla Rofa. Now, so the Gemara says, hashta da'amut eid echad meheiman. So now that you're telling me that one aid is believed, and then the question is, idochad heichimotzi machashlei, then how could a second aide come and contradict him anyway? Well, Omar Ula, didn't Ula say, and Rashi points out that from here on until the end of the sugya, which is a third of the way down the wide lines, this part of the Gemara is going to be almost an exact repetition of what we had earlier on Daf Lamed Aleph, because we have those three cases in Halacha where the Torah believes one aide. One is this case of an Egla Rofa, where if you have one aide who knows who the killer is, then you don't do the Egla Rofa. Another one we had earlier in the sixth parak of our Masechta, we had if one person saw that the Sota became Tomei, then we don't have her go through the whole Sota procedure. The whole point is only when we have a Suffolk whether she became Tomei. And the third example is to give aiders that a woman's husband died, she shouldn't remarry. So in all those three places, we had this almost word for word in Yevamos as well, and we had it earlier in our Masechta, and here we have it the third time, where the Gemara is going to go through this whole din of one aid versus two aid. So it's almost word for word. Anyway, so didn't Ula say, Kol mokam shemina Torah aid echad, whenever the Torah believes one aid, hare kan shnayim, that's the equivalent of having two, because that one aid has the strength of two aidim, the ein dvarav shal echad mokam shnayim. And one aid's words don't stand up against two. So if Reuven comes and says, I know who the killer is, then he's already counted like two aidim. So now if Shimon comes and says, no, because that person you're accusing was someplace else at the time, or you were someplace else at the time or whatever, how can we believe one aid against, in effect, two aidim? So the Gemara says, Amalach Ula. So Ula will tell you, you're right, Tony Loi Hoy Orphan. As a matter of fact, you have to change the wording of the Mishnah. The Mishnah should say they don't do the Egla Rofa in that case, because you're right, one aid can't contradict what we consider now to be two aid. Rabbi Yitzchok says the same thing. On the other hand, Rav Chiya Amar Toni Hoyu Ofrin. Rav Chiya disagrees and says, no, you still have to keep the words in the Mishnah that you do the Egla Rufa in that case. Well, the question is, Rav Chiya Kasha de Ula knew what is Rav Chiya doing with Ula's statement. Now, of course, the Gemara could answer very simply, so what? Rav Chiya can disagree with Ula, but the Gemara is assuming that he's not. This that Ula says is an ungenumina thing, is an accepted thing in Shas, and we shouldn't assume that Rav Chiya disagrees with it. So the answer is, loy kasha, kan b'vasachas, kan b'zachazeh. There's a difference between, the Mishnah is talking about where they both gave aid, both Edim gave Edus b'vasachas, one after the other. So therefore, so before Beis Din even had a chance to accept the first one's Edus, the second one already came and spoke up. Tosfos earlier on Lamed Aleph from Beis discussed the question, when we say b'vasachas, do we mean literally b'toch k'dei dibur, or do we mean before Beis Din actually did something based on what he says? Or issued a verdict based on what he says. But whatever. So then that would be the Mishnah. Therefore, so the one aid doesn't yet have the strength of two aidim because Beis Din didn't do anything based on his testimony. Whereas Ula is talking about where the first one came and gave aidus, and later on the second one came. So by the time he comes, the first one already has the strength of two aidim. Okay, the Gemara says Tanan. Well, let's look at our Mishnah. Aid echad omer reisya sahorig. The Mishnah says if one aid says I saw the killer, or shnayim em lo reisa, and two aidim say that he did that, and two aidim say you didn't see him. So hoyu ofin, then they would go ahead with the egla rufa because the two contradict the one. So the implication seems to be hochad b'chad lo hoyu ofin, implying that if it was one aid against one aid, you wouldn't. That's why the Mishnah has to stress that only two aidim came the second time. Well, wouldn't that be a contradiction on Rav Chiya? Because according to him, one aid against one aid could be enough in some cases, where it's one after the other. So why is the Mishnah saying only two? So the Gemara answers back, knew and according to your Svara that you're even asking the question, look at the next part of the Mishnah. If two aidim say we saw and one aid says you didn't see, then we don't do the Egla Arufa. Are you going to imply from that? Are you going to infer from that? That if it's one against one, you do, according to the logic we just said, that no, if you have one against one, you don't necessarily. So therefore, so obviously what you're being medayik from the Mishnah is not so exact. Ella masnisim kula b'psula edus. Rather, what you have to say is the entire Mishnah is actually not talking about regular kosher edim. Then you would apply Ula's rule that one aid counts as if he was two. Rather, we're all talking about psula edus. We're talking about that the people who came were women or people who have done certain averus that are psula edus or relatives or whatever. V'chidur Nechemya. So therefore, our Mishnah is following what Nechemya says. De Omer, Reb Nechemya says, kol mokam shem min ha-Torah eid echad. Any place, all of these three places here, and by the soita, and by a woman's husband's death, where the Torah believes one aid, holach acha roiv deis. Then what you actually do is you go according to the majority of opinions. You see how many people there are on each side. And so the Chachamim considered that two women against one man are the equivalent of two men against one man. So in other words, the two women, the two women outweigh the one man. So when the Mishnah is saying that you had one aid saying that I saw, and two aidim saying that not, the two aidim are actually women, and the point of the Mishnah is that nevertheless they overbalance him. So the vote would be, in other words, that we're not necessarily, so therefore, that's why the Mishnah gives the various scenarios of one aid versus two aidim, because by psula aidus, you don't say whichever one came first has the force of two aidim. Rather, you say, you actually have to look at the number of people on each side. The ikadam, the others learn from Nechemya's statement differently. No, when one kosher aid, now according to the first version of Reb Nechemya that we just explained, it would mean that even if you had one kosher aid come to begin with, but then you have two women come after him, then they would still be mevatel as aiders. He's one, and Ula said he has the force of two, but nevertheless, because in this case, we're not following the regular rules of aiders, because we're talking about a scenario where the Torah is even accepting one aid, then therefore that indicates that we're not following the usual rules of Eidos, rather we strictly go according to a numerical majority. The Ikadam, the others say no. When one kosher aid comes to begin with, And then, yes, he does have the fat, the power of two. And then even if 100 women followed him, they would only be considered like one. And we would say we have one against one, and that's not enough to contradict him. And the scenario in the Mishnah would be, we're the first one. The one that came was a woman. In which case, understand Reb Nechemya's statement as follows. Reb Nechemya, whenever the Torah believes one aid, then you follow the majority opinion. But it means now the Gemara is inferring something different from what Reb Nechemya said. But also, two women against one woman are the equivalent of two men against one man. Meaning, in other words, that only then do you go according to the majority. But when you have two women against one man, then it's like half and half, then it's evenly balanced. So again, if the first aid was kosher, then no number of women can outweigh him. But if the first one was possible, then a larger number of women or a larger number of psula aiders can outweigh them. So they want to ask the Tarti Psula Eders Lomali. In that case, why does the Mishnah have to say two cases of Psula Eders? And the answer is Mao Detainment, because otherwise you would have thought, Kiaz Limin Bosser Roiv Deis Lachumra. When do we follow the majority of the people? It was only Lachumra to accept their Eders and say that, nevertheless, we still have to go through with the Eglad Rufa. Ava Lakula, but at the end of the Mishnah, what it talks about cases where you don't do the Eglad Rufa, lo, you would think that not. Kamash Malon, therefore, we're told that Reb Nechemya's rule applies whether Lachumra or Lakula. So always the rule is if the first one was a kosher aid, then he has the force of two aidim, and therefore only two kosher aidim can outweigh him. But if the first one was apostle, then you go according to Roiv Deis, and then you have the Rambam explains that even, for example, let's say eventually you have 10 women say that that we know who the guy was, but 11 say that you don't, then we still go ahead with the Eglad Rufa, because 11, you have 10 women, but nevertheless, the 11 counterbalances the 10. We said in the Mishnah, Mishirabu HaRoitzchin, and Mishirabu HaRoitzchin, once Roitzchin became more prevalent, then they stopped the Egla Rufa. So turn it up on Mishirabu HaRoitzchin and Botla Egla Rufa, then the Egla Rufa stopped. The Fishayin Abba, Elala Suffolk. Because the whole point of the Egla Rufa is it's brought only for a Suffolk. But now that you have Elazar ben Dinai and others like him, so now you know, and so therefore, Mishirabu or it's fun and begolui. So once you have more prevalently people who kill an open butler Eglad Rufa, and then at that point the Eglad Rufa had to be stopped. Then we said in the Mishnah Mishirabu Hanoyafin Chola, we said once people who commit adultery became more prevalent, then they had to stop the Mesaita. So Tanan Abanan, the pasuk is v'nika ha'ishmei oven, the man will be cleansed of sin. So that means bisman sho ishmei nukum oven. I'm buying more kinesis shtoy, implying only when the man is clean, is cleansed of sin, only then does the water check his wife if she's a soita. And you have Macholikas Rashi and the Rambam, what we mean. According to Rashi specifically, he has to be clean of the Avera of having relations with her after she became a Soita, where we learned at the beginning of the Masechta that she becomes also to him until she drinks the May Soita, so he has to not have done that. According to the Rambam, we mean in general, Bias Asuras. Any Bias Asura would prevent the water from working on his wife, says the Rambam. Anyway. So, if the man is not cleansed of sin, then the water doesn't test his wife. V'omer, as in fact we find in the pasuk, loy efgud abanesei. So, and we have another pasuk that expresses this point, as the Mishnah quoted, loy efgud abanesei pieces nen of gomer. Hashem says, I won't punish you daughters when they commit znus because the men are doing avedus as well. So the Gemara says, my v'omer. Why do we need a second pasuk? We have in Chumash alone we have this concept. Why do we need a pasuk from Nevi'im? So because from the pasuk in Chumash, you would only know if the husband himself is guilty of such avedus. How do we know it also applies if his sons and daughters do such avedus and he doesn't prevent them? Therefore, the second pasuk from Hosea says, I won't punish your daughters when they commit znus, and I won't punish your daughters when they your daughters-in-law when they commit niuf. So therefore, it has to bring that pasuk. V'chitema avon eshes ish ein. So you're going to say, fine, that only applies if they were mazan, if they were doing the isur of eshes ish. Oven de Pnuyaloi, where do we see it also applies to the Aveda of having relations outside of marriage? Toshma, therefore the Braisa brought the end of the Pasuk, Kihemim Azonis Yeforedu, because they, the men, are going and Yeforedu, they're acting like prodim, like mules, together with the Zonis, the Makadashis, Isabechu, we're going and they're bringing Korbanus together with Kadashis, which is another word for Zonis. So therefore we see that it's not just, Znus, it's other kinds of Bias Asuris as well. Okay, the Gemara says, "Mayv omla yovin, you love it." What does the end of that pasuk mean? That says a nation that doesn't understand you love it will be confused. Will like be making efforts to find the truth and they'll be confused. What does that part of the pasuk mean? It means Om Rabbi Lazar, Om Lahem Novi the Yisrael. The Novi is saying to the Jewish people, Im at makpiden al atzmechem, if you're careful about yourselves to do what you're supposed to do, Mayim Birdkin Nishasechem, then the water will test your wives as it's supposed to. Vim lab in a mayim birdkin nishasechem. If not, then it won't. Meaning, in other words, you're wondering, you don't understand why is it there are more and more noyafos and yet the May Soita aren't working. The reason is you're not understanding that what it says you in the pasuk that when the men are misbehaving, then the mei sota doesn't work for their wives either. All right, we'll continue tomorrow, Hashem.